Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by Craig Mauger, John Rury, Jacob Kanzler, and Lauren Gibbons. That was the Blue Man Group that was bringing in this podcast. That was at your suggestion, I think, wasn't it, Lauren?
Well, yeah, because you're going to a Blue Man Group concert this evening.
Well, that's pretty exciting, isn't it? And I've kept the Blue Man Group going for at least the last couple hours.
See, now we got to clarify, though. It's actually Friday. So it's a Friday, Monday.
Well, shouldn't we have clarified that in the beginning anyway?
How are our podcast listeners going to know how this Blue Man Group turned out?
Right.
Well, they could go. I think it's still going on over the weekend,
right? Is it a concert? Do they tell a story? Does it have an ending? These are all things that I don't know about the Blue Man Group.
And I'm assuming you're entering this with Drumbone.
What? Drumbone?
Drumbone.
What's Drumbone?
It's one of their songs.
What?
It's an awesome lead-in song called
is
Drumbone.
That? I'm looking for. Oh yeah, there it is. Yeah, number 10.
Number 10.
I could put it on, I suppose.
That's a not great lead-in song.
Yeah, but that was wasn't my favorite.
It's gonna have to be.
I have no idea.
Is it a concert? Yes. Does it have a storyline? Not really. They just do kind of fun tricks at each other.
And they're blue.
Yeah, it's kind of it is a concert, a glorified concert, and they usually involve some kind of citizen participation. When I went in Boston, we were up in the top row, and our job was to unroll an enormous roll of toilet paper and, like, fling it over the edge of the balcony and let it roll.
From toilet paper to vetoes. This is a great transition, folks.
Oh, wow. John is doing the transitions here.
Oh, what?
Hijacked.
What do you mean? They're both getting... You're talking about bills getting flushed and toilet paper getting flushed?
Oh, okay. That's it.
Yes.
All right. So I had to, like, link the transition. Well, we did have some bills that go bye-bye this week, and I think the gun bill was the one that we were most looking for, Lauren. I asked the governor if he felt like he should have to sign the gun bill because Green cast the deciding vote on the road package. He said no, but it doesn't sound like this bill is gone and dead forever.
No, Green, I spoke to Green for a story yesterday, and he definitely plans on bringing it back up. He said that the governor likes most of the package, but he was concerned with the wording that a lot of other folks were concerned with in regards to personal protection orders and sort of the ambiguity allowing people potentially to get a concealed pistol license. And Green insisted that people with personal protection orders would not be able to obtain a gun physically, but there is a little bit of ambiguity with the concealed pistol license, and that did make a lot of people uncomfortable.
It sounds like an easy fix, though.
You know, that's what he thinks. I mean, it depends on how much people are willing to change that wording now, but that's what he said. He said he'd like to work with the governor on it and plans on bringing it back up.
Sounds unintended, John. I don't think anybody was looking out for the domestic abusers in our society.
I think it was probably unintended. I think the bill's going to come back in some modified form. But the interesting thing when you think about this bill and you take it into context with the comments that were made this week about some of the new bills introduced on prevailing wage is this is actually an issue that could get wrapped up into sort of the lore of the right. There is rumors that there was a promise made to a Republican senator that the governor would sign this bill changing gun boards. Gun advocates clearly like it. There's rumors that that the governor may have made promise to Democrats that he would veto prevailing wage. Does he live up to his promises to the left and not live up to his promises to the right? It's just an interesting story that could wind up becoming one of those things that live on.
He's got to kind of keep his word to the Democrats, doesn't he? Or he kind of taints it.
The alleged word, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, the alleged agreement with Democrats to veto prevailing wage. Because if he doesn't, his word really means nothing to Tim Grimmel. And Grimmel's presumably going to be with him for the remainder, right?
If we're following this allegation down the road that there is an agreement, which all signs seem to point to yes, I think if Snyder went back on his word on that, the Democrats would be telling everyone about how he lied to them and he went back on his word and this road thing should be void because he lied to us about prevailing wage. But Snyder hasn't given any indication that he's going to go back on his word yet, correct?
Right. And it looks like the business community most interested in the Associated Builders and Contractors want to work with the governor and the legislature. Maybe they can get something through, but if they can't,
How about a ballot proposal? You know, a citizens' initiative like what Right to Life did, John. They could go out there, get some signatures, get it approved through both chambers of the legislature, and boom.
I think it's great. I think we need another campaign. We need another, you know, some more ads going up on the air. We need some more stuff to write about.
I just talked with Chris Fisher from ABC of Michigan. I don't think he's all that excited about spending the $1 million or $2 it's going to take to get the petition signatures they would need to put it in front of the legislature, John. So I don't think that's going to happen quite yet, but it's
well, I personally know that the advertising, the TV station owners around the state are really hoping we get another big ballot fight.
Well, I don't know if it would necessarily even come to that, because if you do the citizens' initiative like Right to Life did with,
you're right.
You know, that would just need the support of the House and the Senate, and they.
Well, it's tempting because you take the apparently the only obstacle out of the way, which I guess is the governor.
Right. So it takes the governor out of the equation if they want to, go that route. And again, we're just presuming and just throwing something out. John, you and I were just at the Revenue Estimating Conference that was held there at the Capitol. We're going to be short some money, but it doesn't seem like anyone's pushing the panic button.
No, it doesn't. And the economists were actually very complimentary about the state of the Michigan economy and the fact that it theoretically, if you remove some business tax credits that were offered way back long ago that are now being collected upon because the economy is improving, revenues should actually be up quite nicely, but they're not. They're getting trimmed on the general fund side to the tune of, I believe it's $550 million for the coming fiscal year and $240 million for this fiscal year.
That's money that we can get somewhere, right? School aid fund? You can move some money around.
You can move money around. It's a lot of money. There's a balance. There should be a balance in the school aid fund that you could theoretically move over, though I'm sure that would cause some controversy, but there's money to be moved around.
Now, the Democrats have already put out a release saying this is Republican policies that got us into this situation. This comes after Republicans and Democrats in the House had some problems over some committee assignments, and it also comes after prevailing wage is the first item out of the chute, Craig. This isn't starting off to be a session where the Republicans and Democrats are on the same page.
No, I think that feeling of cooperation died after one day. It didn't last very long, and now we're back to where we've been before. People of different parties feuding over committee assignments, policy. It just seems like normal, doesn't it?
Well, we should clarify, too, though, on the tax credit issue. A lot of those tax credits were issued during a Democratic gubernatorial administration when they controlled the mega authority and the ability to grant those tax credits. The battery tax credits were part and parcel of Jennifer Granholm's agenda. So it's and they were Republican-controlled legislatures at the time, so it's not like this is a party issue.
No, but I think what the Democrats are saying is that Snyder and the Republicans have not shied away from giving out some type of incentive, some kind of goodies at the strategic fund level or the MEDC. They haven't shut down giving incentives, Jacob, as far as you've seen, have they?
Right, yeah. And, I mean, that was a good point that John made. I mean, Snyder will argue that they changed the program so it's not just these tax credits end out in the future. It's more of a cash thing with a lot of strings attached. I have found it interesting that, you know, there's been a lot of indirect, without naming one blame, I feel like, on the previous administration apparently handing out all these different tax credits. It seems where they're putting the blame on this.
It is really interesting, though, I think, to look at kind of how much uncertainty there is right now around the state's budget in terms of you know, the business tax laws that have changed. Now we have this personal property tax law that's going to change, and then we have this sales tax proposal that's going to be on the ballot. I mean, there are so many uncertainties out there, and it's interesting that so much is being put into these projections that are being done years into the future.
It's a good point, and you also wonder if the sales tax increase does go through, does that impact the economy? You know, we didn't really talk about that today with the economists about whether or not that folds into their projections for the future.
Other than we know that even if that does pass, we are well under the Headley limit as far as our constitutional taxing limitation. And as far as how much state government taxes its citizens, we're down to like levels we haven't seen since, what'd they say, the 1960s or something?
Something like that. And there are groups in town, I'm sure, that would like to use that to justify an increase in taxes, to increase services and increase support for government.
One more thing I wanted to touch on, Craig. You took on a project that appeared in MERS on Friday about whether the legislature is indeed more conservative this term than it was last term, and you use that based on our rankings of liberal conservative votes taken by members over the last couple of years, what'd you find out?
What I found out through this very complex statistical look I've done here is that the House Republicans who left the chamber at the end of last term tended to be less conservative than the Republicans who are staying in the chamber. It's the same thing in the Senate. And then when you look at leadership, the new leaders in the House and Senate are much more conservative in their voting than the old leaders. So all signs point to the legislature taking a step or perhaps a jump or perhaps a short car trip to the right next term.
So I have to ask, was there an algorithm in this?
No algorithm. I mean, no complex algorithm.
A lot of
averages. There are no cosines. Nothing like that.
Nothing like that, okay.
You did need some Algebra 2, though, to figure this out. Did Algebra 2 come into play?
I don't think so.
Were there any variables? X's and Y's?
There's like a new conservative liberal algorithm.
Yeah, we can concoct something. Well, that's when we bring in the MERS mathematician,
right.
The staff mathematician. That's the next
thing.
Certainly
not me.
Joining me this week is the chair of the House Detroit Caucus, Representative Brian Banks. Thanks for being on the program today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much, Kyle, for inviting me.
Well, today is, and we are taping on Thursday, this is going to be airing on Monday, Martin Luther King Day. I feel like this is a day that I should recognize or celebrate in some way. For people who aren't familiar with what they should be doing on this kind of day, other than taking the day off, what should you do on Martin Luther King Day?
Oh, well, Kyle, when you think about the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., you think about him being a servant of humanity. As well as he had a life of service to others. You know, he fought for social justice issues, as well as ensuring that all people had equal treatment and were treated equally. So, you know, when we remember Dr. Martin Luther King, I think that, you know, that's a time that we should look at the work he's done and find ways that we can serve in our community to continue the effort and the job that Dr. King started and the foundation that he's laid. You know, here in Michigan, we have a great deal of issues that we're facing to ensure that people are treated equally. We have the same-sex marriage issue. We have the equal pay, equal work issue going on. And there are a number of equality issues from, you know, all policy areas. You know, look at those and stand up and take an issue and stand up and remember Dr. King and, you know, take some time to really stand up and do something on his day that mirrors what he's done and the foundation that he laid to ensure that all people had, you know, the right to equality in every area of their life.
Have you seen Selma yet?
I have not. I'm actually going to see it on tomorrow.
Are you really?
Yes.
Yeah, it's gotten some great reviews.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've heard some great things about it. I think everyone from the reviews I've seen should see it. And I think it's a movie that we can have a great dialogue on and we can see, you know, how far we've come and how far we've got to go.
As far as relations in the legislature, how would you describe race relations?
When you look at the legislature right now, you do see that African Americans are represented very minimum here in the legislature. But I do believe that we all have good relationships, you know, for the most part on both sides of the chamber. I think that the minority legislators do a very good job, and they represent their districts and constituents, and they have the respect of their colleagues.
All right. Well, now you are the chair of the Detroit Caucus this year. The governor is going to be announcing his state of the state address tomorrow. What are you hoping to hear?
Well, we're actually hoping to hear the governor to unveil his plan for the next 2 years. And we're hoping to hear some things as it relates to the city of Detroit, improving the quality of life for the residents of the city of Detroit, starting with our education system. We have the Detroit Public School System, who just received their fourth emergency manager last week after being told, you know, that pretty much we were at the end of that. But we're waiting to hear from the governor to understand and find out what the state of Detroit public school system is. We want to ensure that all children have access to a quality education. And that starts first with restoring local democracy and local control. We have an elected school board, you know, who has been in exile for a number of years now, And those people were elected by the citizens of Detroit, and their voice has been silent under the emergency management issue. So we're hoping that the governor will unveil a plan, and he's supposed to hear from a coalition on March the 31st, their recommendation as to what the state of DPS should be. And we're hoping that the governor will understand that the citizens of the city of Detroit have a right to receive a quality education through our public school system, and that, you know, our local elected officials should have a voice. We're also hoping to hear that insurance rates in the city of Detroit are lowered, and that the residents and the citizens receive some form of relief from redlining, an issue that's been fought and been dealt with for a number of years, and many legislators have fought that issue. The last 2 years, you know, the no-fault reform was brought up, but the Democrats, along with several Republicans, stood strong, and we were able to stop the changes to our no-fault system. However, you know, we're looking for some form of relief as it relates to insurance rates and things like that, and redlining. You know, we're also looking to hear more about the criminal justice and prison system as it relates to expungement law, expanding that further. You know, we just expanded the expungement law where individuals can get one felony and two misdemeanors expunged, and that broadened the opportunity for individuals to get their records clear. But there are still some other areas that we would like to see as it relates to our criminal justice system. We're also looking at jobs and economic development. And making sure that there is equality in the contracts of jobs and the economic development, especially in the city of Detroit. Just recently, we've been seeing at an alarming rate minority businesses downtown Detroit who are being evicted because of high rates for rent. Just recently, a night before last, there's a company, a business downtown Detroit who put in several million dollars and is having to move now after they've invested in remodeling a building. And there's another company that's been downtown Detroit for almost 30 years, and now their rent has come to a level where they can't afford it anymore.
Is that a good sign in the sense that maybe property values are going up in the city of Detroit to the point where, you know, they feel like they can charge more?
Well, it's a good sign that property values are going up. However, I think we must remember and be considerate and mindful of those businesses that stuck with Detroit. You know, when downtown Detroit, you know, was dead, you know, for a business to still be in operation after 30 years in the city of Detroit, now to have to move or close its doors because they can't afford rent, I think that's unfair. And this is a reason why community benefits, you know, the community benefit agreement is important. As you saw this last legislative session, you know, the community benefit bill, I think it was House Bill 5977, came up. And that's why it's important for the community and its stakeholders to have a voice in this, you know, deciding and understanding what investments and what opportunities come into the community. And that's an issue that the caucus is very well concerned about, the community benefits. And our Detroit City Council has and the president of the Detroit City Council, Councilwoman Brenda Jones, that's an issue that she's been fighting for some time now to ensure that residents have a say in what comes in their community and also understand the investment and the return of that investment into the community. So those are just a few items that the Detroit caucus we're looking at and want to ensure that the governor speaks about, you know, education, jobs, our criminal justice system, and also our roads. You know, our roads. You know, we have the bill, the proposal that's coming up, the ballot proposal.
Are you going to support that?
I believe that at this point, yes, I'm going to support it. Totally support it. I will support it. When you look at, you know, what was available, you know, that was the best option at this point. But when you look at that bill and you look at what we're getting in return, you know, I think it's a viable option. And the governor has also worked very hard with the Black caucus this last legislative session to ensuring that minorities and women have a great opportunity to receive some of the road funding contracts and some of the deals that come through with the road funding project. So that's very important to the city of Detroit, but not only Detroit, but to the state of Michigan as a whole, to ensure that all contractors have an opportunity to receive part of the road project deals and things like that.
You mentioned DPS right off the bat. Is it time for the state to get out of trying to manage DPS?
Absolutely. When you look at Detroit Public Schools, it really wasn't until the state got involved that we saw the deficit, that we've seen the deficit that we see. As I stated before, the Detroit Public School System has an elected school board. These individuals have been elected by the people of the city of Detroit, and they are qualified. They have the education and the experience to run that, the Department of Education, and I believe that it's time the state step out and allow them to come in and do their job. We've had four emergency managers now, and we continue to be in a deficit. So why not allow the people who were elected to do the job to do their job and create some type of mechanism and ways to advance this, the Detroit public school system?
How do you think, the last question I want to ask you, how do you think Governor Snyder has done overall as far as dealing with Detroit?
I will say, and especially in the last 2 years, I would say the governor has been a partner with the city of Detroit. The city of Detroit has come from bankruptcy, and we've emerged from, you know, a bankruptcy. We've had numerous meetings with the governor, and you know, oftentimes we all are not on the same page. But I believe the governor has become a little more sensitive to the needs of Detroit, and I believe that he understands that as Detroit prospers, so does the whole state. However, we have a long way to go. You know, we still have revenue sharing, you know, that's owed to the city of Detroit. And that's a big chunk of revenue that each municipality looks to, you know, to make sure their city moves forward. You know, if Detroit can get some of the revenue that's owed to them, I believe Detroit would be in a much better position, you know, than we're in right now. And we are moving ahead, and the sun is shining yet again on the city of Detroit.
All right. Very good. Brian Banks, I appreciate the time.
Thank you, sir.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to the crew here, Brian Banks and the Michigan Press Association, for sending this out far and wide. Craig, I would be remiss if I didn't mention your new nickname. Hey, John, do you remember when Craig first started? What did Rita say we should nickname him?
A Scooter.
I thought it was Skippy.
No, Scooter.
Scooter?
Scooter.
Where did that ever come from?
I don't know. It just...
Well, Craig tried to nickname Jacob Skippy today, and as it turned out...
Skippy and Scooter.
I did not try to nickname anyone. I want to clarify the record.
Wait, this isn't how I remember it, but we just somehow the name Skippy came up, and then Craig just started talking about this Australian show called Skippy the Bush Kangaroo, and that was pretty awesome.
That's kind of engrossed our attention outside of Blue Man Group.
Yes, bottom line for our listeners is if you want to watch a show about a kangaroo who can do everything, check out Skippy the Bush Kangaroo.
That's been an official MERS endorsement.
Do we do this?
No. No, we don't.
I guess that would be the first time since we named Teddy's the best Reuben sandwich in town. And
that was a scientific conclusion.
Yeah, we saw what happened with Teddy's.
Yeah. I don't know if we can bring the popularity of Skippy down anymore, though.
I think Skippy's dead. I think Skippy died a long time ago. I bet you Skippy wasn't even airing when you were born.
Probably not.
No, it's an older show. It's a wholesome show. It's a beautiful show about a kangaroo who helps a family.
This is
and
real.
You're ruining it.
This is real. Okay, well, with that, now I know how we tape these things Monday morning and not Friday afternoon. Next week's edition, we will tape it Monday morning. It'll be a little different, I'm sure. Until then, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.